Today, I'm talking to Moira Holly, co-founder and senior global estate advisor of Realogix Sotheby's International Realty in Seattle, Washington. She is consistently ranked among the top 1% of the Northwest's most successful luxury real estate specialists, and she has broken the record twice for selling the most expensive condo in downtown Seattle. Not to mention her sales of private islands and waterfront properties. She's a woman who doesn't know how to do anything without passion. When she talks about her clients, she talks about them as if she's talking about herself. She says that for she and her clients, Northwest living means having the best of the city and the natural environment literally at your doorstep. World-class skiing and leading-edge galleries, mornings spent on a mountaintop, and the most coveted luxury shopping, coffee houses, restaurants, and nightlife. Northwest living means always having an opportunity to embrace your spontaneity and express it at any moment, any day, any time. She and I talk about how to find your passion and allow the path to your best. Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. This podcast was created for real estate agents across the country to come together, sharing ideas to take your, their, and our business to the next level. All right, everybody. It's the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. Today, we have a very special guest who I have known for a few years now, and it's been way too long for you to come on the show, but it's Moira Holly. I always want to say Mariah, but Moira Holly, and she is from Seattle, Washington, and she's got a lot to share because she is a top agent, really well known. Moira, welcome to the show.
Jerry, thank you. It has been a long time, and we were first introduced through the market leaders with Sotheby's, a very high-powered group of about 40 of the top brokers from around the country, and we were very fortunate to meet then. And so we've known each other for 6, maybe 7 years or so.
I think it's been 5. It's been a few. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's good to see you on Zoom. I'm ready to see you again in person soon.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you for being on, by the way.
This is a treat.
So let's start as we always do and tell us a little bit about how and why you became a real estate agent.
Well, in about 1992, I would say actually my interest in real estate has been lifelong. Riding in the back of my parents' car, looking for property, my parents were getting ready to build a house in California, down on the peninsula, actually. I knew while I was riding in the back of the car that this was something that I could see myself doing in the future. But it took a long time for me to circle back to that. And so I would say it was the mid 80s. I met an architect, and he really opened my eyes to architecture and design. And so all of the things that I had been doing up to that point involved sales, outside sales, retail sales, sales of all kinds. And so at some point, I guess, in the late 80s, I really started to think about how I could incorporate design and sales and architecture. And it really led me to real estate.
Wow. So when you became an agent, so first of all, You met an architect, you're inspired by architecture and design, and you enjoyed sales, you enjoyed connecting with people.
Mm-hmm.
How did you land on real estate? Like, there's gotta be a story. What sealed the deal on being an agent for you?
I think it was really my strong desire to take what I felt was my strength in sales, and having done so many different kinds of sales, and how could I take that into a business where I worked for myself? I was still involved. I was involved with architecture and design. Take that passion, take the passion for sales as well, and combine the two. And it just really made sense. I mean, the light bulb went off. And I think as a young person, I was at that point in my life where I wanted to take a risk. And I'd been in and out of college and never finished. And I think I just knew that I had a different path. And so it just, the doors started opening. I went to school, I got my license, and I landed in a boutique firm with the previous generation of agents who were all much, much older than I. I was the youngster in the office. And I enjoyed, you know, getting to know about real estate and hearing about their pasts and their careers and what it was like and, you know, what it was like in the old days. And they were really all mentors to me. And so I think with my passion for design and architecture, and then really learning this trade, if you will, from these experts who just had so much knowledge. And it's interesting to me because, you know, that is a rarity these days. I mean, our industry is so modern, and it's become a very young industry, especially you watch Million Dollar Listing.
Yeah.
You know, they're youngsters, right?
So true.
And so coming up in the ranks, I guess, with these incredible mentors, it was just, I mean, it was eye-opening, and I learned so much from them, and they were so good to me. And, you know, I held properties open that I would never have an opportunity to hold open as a new agent if I had landed in, you know, in an office with agents, all of, you know, my peer group and my age group. So I really felt very, very fortunate to be mentored by these individuals.
So you, architecture, design, and sales. And then I hear passion, independence, /freedom, or
yes.
Room to be creative.
Yes.
And independent. And then you started in a boutique. Now, did you start, have you been in Washington your entire career?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. So you talk about know your market.
And I lived at the time. So going back to the mid 80s, back when I met the fellow who was the architect that inspired me, he happened to be the project architect for a hotel that was built in the Pike Place Market. So for those who know Seattle, the Pike Place Market it's the most European existence in our city. If you were to say, take me someplace in Seattle that has a European flavor, it would be the Pike Place Market. And it's where all of the vendors and the butchers and the fruit stands and the bakeries and the original Starbucks is in the Pike Place Market.
Oh.
Yeah, the original.
Which is that Pike? It's
in the Pike Place Market. And what is it called there? Goodness.
Isn't there a coffee Starbucks coffee flavor that's Pike?
Oh, there is. Yes.
I mean, everybody's probably laughing at how naive I am that I didn't already know that.
No, that is where it came from. That is where it came from. So, so I was invited by this architect to meet with a woman, a friend of his, who was renting apartments in the hotel that he had just designed. So the third floor of the hotel had been deemed not quite up to the level of the hotel. So because the views were impacted by a low rise building in front. And so there was one apartment left to be rented and we were having lunch and he asked me if I'd be interested in living in the market. And I said, well, I've never thought about living downtown. I've never thought about living in the market. Sure, I'd love to see it. So I went and I toured the hotel and toured what became my apartment and signed the lease then and there. And that's how it began. I was living in the Pike Market. And
downtown. And how many years ago was that? What year was that?
I would say probably 1984.
So it all started in 1984.
Yes.
Because now, which I wanted a few things, we want to talk about how you got into the market because you basically have been specializing in condos in downtown Seattle, but there's also a shift in the market that you're shifting with.
Yes, exactly.
Remind me, 1984, so you already had your license.
I didn't, no.
You didn't yet, okay.
The inspiration started in the mid-80s, and I did wholesale for a little French bakery in the Pike Place Market, and I sold pastries and desserts and cakes for my very dear friend who owned the bakery, and so at that time, desserts were on every menu in Seattle. Every high-end restaurant wanted to buy their desserts from a fancy bakery, French bakery. And so I did sales for her, and I lived directly across the street in the hotel, the Inn at the Market. And so eventually I came to the realization that I needed to do something to actually earn a living and that I couldn't survive on pastry sales. And so so that's what led me to get my license. And I was living in the Pike Place Market and I started working in the condominiums in and around the Pike Place Market, which is where now the Four Seasons is a block away from the market, and our most expensive condominium towers all surround the market because it's actually the very best location in all of downtown Seattle. So I actually lived in the very best location before I started selling real estate.
Wow. So you started selling real estate
in 92.
It was like, I'm going to sell near, well, what did you say?
In 92.
So in 92.
Yeah.
So that's 84 to 92. You finally decided. Okay.
I sold a lot of cakes and a lot of croissants.
Talk about a drastic change in career from selling pastries to being a top real estate agent in Seattle, Washington, and the country. So you are living in Seattle.
Hope.
What's that?
I said, there's hope. There's
exactly.
Hope.
Everybody. So you basically got your life. You're already 8 years in the Pike Place Market. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of obvious where to sell real estate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you got, what's that?
Yes.
And so when you got your license, did you go, okay, this is the plan, this is what's going to happen? Or did you just go, I've got my license, let's see what happens?
I got my license and I'm sure I had a plan, but you never know. I think I worked with all of the wrong people for the first 3 or 4 months, people who, couldn't afford what they said they could. I mean, you work with your friends, you work with friends who friends referred to you. And actually my very first sale was in a building called Market Court, which was one of the anchor buildings in the Pike Place Market. And it was a small little one bedroom condominium. The building is there today, and it's still really sought after building, wonderful location. But it was, I think it was $139,000. And that was my very first sale in 1992.
What can you get for $139,000 in downtown Seattle today?
You can get 2.5 parking spaces.
Well, there you go. So you've seen a lot of change.
Two parking spaces. Yeah.
When you got your license, did you get it? Was it like, oh, I'll get my license? Or was it, this is going to be my career?
Oh, I was absolutely certain that this was going to be my career. And I was in it to win it. And I had savings. I had a car. I had a BMW, an old BMW four-door sedan. And, you know, it was like driving my living room around. And it was hysterical. And I had to park my car on the street. I couldn't afford to put it in a garage. And so I had to get up every morning before 9 o'clock and go and feed the meter.
Wow. So now here you are, highly successful, mission accomplished. A lot of people go into this business saying the same thing. I'm going to go and do this and it's going to work. And you know, it's like you get a job and you're just going to have a job. I mean, I know jobs aren't that easy, because maybe I'd have one, not really. But going into this, what do you think, what's the difference between you and the 95% of people who don't last more than a year or two in this business?
Oh, I think passion is a lot of it. I think this is a business that when you're starting out, or when I was starting out, I didn't stop. I worked so hard every day. And it was back in the day when we had books, you know, with listings. And,
yes.
And the files just piled up on my front seat. And I had piles of files in my passenger seat as I started to build my business. And I probably worked until midnight every night. And I just didn't stop. And I think in the first 5 to 7 years, I actually think that I thought if I stopped, I might lose my momentum. And I might, you know, my business might stop. And so I think, you know, so much of it is luck, a lot of hard work. But I think passion more than anything is what really helps agents who can see themselves in it for the long haul. And I think agents that I know whose families have been involved in real estate for a long time, those agents are so fortunate. I mean, they grew up with it. They've lived it, slept it, ate it, you know, they know what to expect. And I think that's one of the hardest things for new agents today is they're so used to seeing the slick television shows and what it's like. And you know, if I dress a certain way, I'm going to be successful. And that's just not the case, or that's not what I found.
Yeah. Well, dressing a certain way helps. that's like a small part of the formula. And again, like, not to sidetrack, but I think about what is Ben Bacall. I mean, he wears a black t-shirt and jeans.
Right.
And you have other agents who, like me, I've got to have my cute flared pants and my nice top. But you talk about passion. I mean, I think you've said the word passion from the reason you got in this business to the reason you've made it in this business. And then you've talked about, I really think, expectations, because when you said family, it was having family that's been in it for two reasons. Number one, because you've seen what it's like and you have the support. Because I know when I got in the business and I went to lunch with my family and I'm a brand new agent and I had to step away and take a call, I'm definitely not going to keep the business as a brand new agent. It was like a crime, but I had a very supportive boyfriend who is now my husband of a long time, 13 years. Anyway, and he was the one that was like, no, you take that call.
Yeah.
But not in a supportive way. So that's interesting that you say that. It's passion, expectations, and support.
Mm-hmm. And I think having, yes.
You stayed up until midnight. What gave you the energy to do that? Youth helps and the little passion. Mm-hmm. But you were going to say, I think that.
Oh, I think that just thinking back on that, I, in hindsight, probably shouldn't have worked that hard, and that, you know, that forcefully, I guess. I mean, looking back, I think, wow, I worked entirely too much for a long, long time. And yeah. I didn't understand the need for help. I didn't understand. And I think for agents, there are a lot of agents who are very controlling and have to be in control, right? We know.
Right.
We know.
You're talking about me. My team cannot listen to this interview, by the way.
And it's about eventually, and sometimes it did take me a while. I would say I worked on my own a good 10 years before I had help, before it made
wow.
sense.
Wow. And 10 years before you had help.
Yes. So 10 years with the files on the passenger side seat, which I'd have to move to the back seat if someone wanted to get in my car. But no, I managed my own files for about 10 years.
So earlier you said I probably worked too hard for the first five, but
yeah.
Was it
almost 10? I would
now
say
how, this is a big question. I think we have a lot of listeners who are on both ends of the spectrum. When you're new, do I really have to work that hard? And when you're experienced, I'm asking personally, how do I stop working so hard? And know that it's, what are the parts that you, how do you like start from the beginning? Am I really going to have to work that hard?
I think you do have to work. I think you have to prioritize this business as it's the most important. For me, it was the most important pursuit in my life at the time. And I wanted to be successful. I wanted to do more business, but I did have difficulty deciding when it was time to delegate. And it was actually a client of mine that I was helping who was moving here from the South. And she and her husband had a job at Microsoft, and she didn't know what she was going to do. And she had a marketing background. And she was the one who looked at me and said, oh my gosh, you have all these files sitting on the front seat of your car. I must have had 20 files on the front seat of my car. And she said, you need an assistant. And I said, do you need a job? And it was at that moment that we agreed to look at each other in that way. And she got her license and she came on board and she was my very first assistant.
Wow. That was just kind of like divine or.
It was some kind
like
of.
The stars aligned.
It was.
So transitioning from doing it all yourself.
Yeah.
To letting someone do it for you and knowing it's going to be done and be okay. And then, by the way, they had to be trained.
Right.
How did that work out?
And I think that is the biggest fear in letting go, of that control. And it is learning to delegate, and training was difficult. I mean, I won't say that it wasn't. And I think that's always the fear when you're hiring an assistant, unless they've worked for another agent. We were both really green. I was a workhorse, and she was very, very smart and picked it up really easily. And it just ended up being a great fit. And we found our balance through, I was able to delegate a little bit of and at that time I represented a lot of buyers. And so I was able to meet with buyers and hand them over to her. And I think if I had it to do over again, I don't know that I would have done it in quite that way, but that's mm-hmm. what our market was like at that time. And that was what my business was, very buyer heavy. And so over the years, I transitioned into being more of a listing agent. And I think that also comes with age, experience, and successes that you have. So if you start to feel success on the listing side, maybe I think I lost interest in working with so many buyers that I wanted to really work with buyers who were looking for the kinds of properties that I was really passionate about. And so it was a natural evolution in terms of how my business transitioned. And it just seemed that doors were opening. Because of my interest and passion in design and architecture, I'm known for representing architecturally significant and historic properties, and also have an innate ability to find these kinds of properties for buyers as well. So I became more and more known for that, in addition to everything I did in downtown Seattle, because I really did specialize in the beginning in condominiums, because that's what I had access to. And I lived, surrounded by the condominiums that were coming online. And Seattle was a very, very small city at the time in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And so I've really grown up with the city, and my business has grown up with the city and the changing market.
So let's talk about this passion, because it keeps coming back to passion and a few things. When you got into business, you worked really hard, and there became a point where you recognized it was forceful, and you were able to let go and surrender to an assistant who it wasn't easy to train, even though she was smart, mm-hmm. but you got her trained. And she was obviously, you didn't just get her trained. She played a important role in that. And then I hear things happening, like you kept making decisions based on what drove your passion. Mm-hmm. And doors were opening. And you went from, okay, I'm hungry, I've got to make this, to working way too hard for a few years too long, to redirecting yourself to passion, and doors opening because you're aligning yourself with your passion. Now, a few things you did say earlier you would have done differently. You were talking about you had buyers and you were handing them to your assistant. You would have done that differently. What do you, like, tell us a little bit about what you mean by that.
I think I can look back historically, and I can see in certain years of my career where I was actually reaching burnout and handing buyers over to an assistant. And then after my first assistant joined me, we actually took on a second assistant and an assistant to manage all of the, a transaction coordinator, who was also a full-time assistant. And so at that time I had a full-time transaction coordinator assistant who managed listings and input photos and uploaded listings and handled escrows and closings. And I had two, what I would call buyer's agents. And I think at that moment in time, I was probably burning out. And so it was a way to keep the business flowing and have business for them. And so I would was the rainmaker, and through my marketing and my connections and my network and my past business, had a flow of business coming in. And I regret the time in my career that I didn't take the time for myself to pull back and take a break. And I think if nothing, if anything that I've learned that I would love to share with newer agents and experienced agents is really listening to that inner voice. When it's not fun anymore, you have to stop, and the business will still be there. And that was a mistake that I made. I went too hard, too long without a break. And then I would hit a wall, have to take a break, go sit on a beach somewhere, and come back. And maybe I was still a little burned out. So I feel now that my business, the scale of my business is absolutely intentional. And I have finally found the balance that's required to, you know, have a happy life, a happy social life, a happy business life. And I really do feel that that has become my success at this point. I feel like I have been able to find balance.
I think this is like the godsend of a conversation for me and for one of my team members who will remain unnamed, because I think we all, people who are driven and passionate people are also relentless people. Mm-hmm. So as in successful agents are passionate, relentless people. So as a passionate, relentless person, first of all, let's just trying to cut all this to the chase here and ask the right question to get the answer we're all looking for. How do you take a break and know that, yes, maybe the business will come, but we don't want to let people down that are looking for us and need us or want to find us. We know the emotions they're experiencing are like somebody's dying, even if they aren't, because we're talking about their home, their family, and their money. So how do you take a break? Anybody?
You plan for it. And I, in the past, 10 years ago, for instance, 10 years ago, 7 years ago, I didn't plan for it. And I would just hit a wall. And so now I plan for it. And I'm really not hard driving. I feel like I've been very, very blessed and very, very fortunate with the kinds of clients who find me, who know my reputation, the quality of the properties that I'm asked to market, and same the buyers who seek out my expertise. I feel like I'm able to share that, to share the, I don't know, I keep going back to balance, but I feel like I'm not letting them down if I let them know that they're in good hands with my associate. They're in great hands. I'm just going to take a break. And it might be a week, it may be 2 weeks. I actually took a 3-week trip 3 years ago over the holidays. And, you know, I posted a picture on social media and a very good friend of mine who was a past client saw it and realized that I was out of town. And he called someone else. He didn't call my phone. He didn't call my voicemail. He saw that I was out of town. So I did learn a lesson. Do not post on social media when you're traveling and taking a break, because had I not done that, he would have reached out and I could have said, you're in great hands.
Wow. Yeah.
And so I did learn a lesson there. But again, planning and now just not going so hard, so long without a break. And
well, yeah, go ahead. No, go ahead. And,
oh no. And also I think just the fact that, the type of business that I have at this point in my career, I just feel so grateful. I don't feel like my hair's on fire. I feel like my clients are sophisticated. They understand, you know, but yeah. when you're young and you're pushing so hard, everything moves at that pace. So it's just the pace, I think.
Well, but to answer the question, here's the answer I heard. How to take a break, a few things. To bullet point it, you plan, you communicate it, and you communicate it properly by setting the expectations of what's going to happen and that you are in great hands.
Exactly.
And don't post on social media that you're out of town because you're going to lose a listing. Just kidding. You might not. I have posted in Rosemary Beach and I've actually gotten referrals, a couple, because I was in Rosemary. So everybody calls me for an agent in Rosemary and then I get to refer business out. But it's, yeah, or maybe we figure out, like, not to sidetrack here, guys, but figure out a way to post social media to talk about the networking you're doing in the city while you're there for your clients.
Exactly. Exactly.
But no, great point. It's don't take what you get for granted. Don't just drop everything and chill, plan, communicate, set expectations. Something else on the less bullet pointed, precise end of that is that I also hear you saying you keep coming from word one, passion. Follow your passion. You said for a minute, it was only once, but you said, I got too forceful. And what I hear now, and tell me if this is right, is you went from forceful to, there's a book called The Go-Giver. My biggest message is not what everybody else's. I've got to read the book because maybe I got it from someplace else, but it's part of giving is you can't give if you can't receive.
Exactly.
Is there's passions that you've been given. They're passions that you are born with. They're gifts that you're born with. They're opportunities that the world has for you, but you must be willing to receive whatever that is, which means sometimes when you're trying to force something, you're saying no to something that you should be saying yes to, or you're not seeing what you should be seeing because you're not, there's that, you know, initial takeoff to your business, but then there's, okay, it's okay to coast, because if we're in takeoff mode the entire time, we're going to go places we're not supposed to go and not good places.
Right.
But does that kind of, sometimes it's being successful doesn't mean it has to be painful. It could be enjoyable, truly. Mm-hmm. I'm telling myself that, by the way, because I love to just work hard. But yeah, no, I love that. And it sounds like in doing what you're doing now, some of it is you had to have, there's some pain, there's some pain points, there's some learning curves. But in becoming good at what you do, you have positioned yourself so that people come to you and the right kind of people come to you.
Mm-hmm. I feel very, very fortunate. Yes.
What's been your biggest lesson in knowing the wrong? Do you have to turn away clients? What is your biggest lesson in getting the right clients that you can share with us?
I think the work I think the work, my website, the marketing, the photography, I'm known for my photography. I'm known for positioning, coming in. Recently, I was actually invited to join a listing to shake up the marketing. The property, it was a private island and it had been on the market for 5 years. And the seller's son reached out to me and asked me if I'd like to take over the listing. And I said to him, you know, you're in the very, very best hands. The gentleman that has the listing is the best of the best for this kind of property. But I would be delighted to join to take over the marketing and stay out of his way, jump on in second position, not be a threat, and just rework the marketing. And here, this is how we're going to do it. And he went back to his father and they had a powwow with the agent and said, this is what Moira has offered to do. Can you get on board with this? And they both said yes. And so we asked that after being on the market for 5 years, I didn't want to go out on a limb and spend a lot of money of my own money and, you know, on something that may or may not work. And so I went to them again and said, what if you pay for a video and new photography and a helicopter and, you know, everything we're going to do here and to tell this new story? And what if we as agents, when the property sells, we, you know, here's our budget. When the property sells, we'll reimburse you and you split 50-50 for taking that on for us. But this is how we're going to do it. And they did. And 4 months later, the island, the private island is pending.
Wow. 4 months later, by the way.
4 months. After five years
and coming out of COVID, which I know there are a lot of great markets, but private islands, I mean, they don't sell every day in any market.
They don't. It's a $5 million private island in the San Juans. And I think actually the marketing is what pushed the buyer to do something because they all of a sudden felt that the buyer had been in the background for many years and just never came forward. And I think they felt the threat of another buyer seeing the island and grabbing it. And so.
And if you can afford an island, now is a great time to buy one.
We took a gorgeous video, hired a helicopter, hired the very best filmmaker who also happened to shoot on the camera with the camera that the owner of the island actually developed the camera lens that is the brains behind this particular type of camera, film camera. And that was part of what jumped out at me. I was watching a video on Instagram that my filmmaker was using, and he tagged the company that belonged to this client. During the course of the time that I was interviewing to join the listing. And so it all just sort of fell into place. And so he was tagging my client's company. And I thought, well, this is genius. Let's just put this all together. And so I went to them and said, well, they're also going to be shooting with your camera. So here we are. And so it just worked.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's brilliant. So obviously you have a really strong reputation for great photography, great marketing. A lot of agents say they have great photography and great marketing. So tell us a little bit more about your photography and your marketing.
I work very closely. I've always worked closely with my photographers over the years. And And I've worked with some of the very, very best. And one in particular, I was involved with giving him his start as a photographer and convinced him to give up his PhD program that he was absolutely miserable in, did not want to become a teacher. And just, he was actually the husband of my transaction coordinator. And they house sat for us while we were on a trip. And they, he took photos of our dogs jumping in the pool, swimming, water droplets on their noses. And when we came back, and he put a book together for us while we were on vacation and they were staying in our house. And it was at that moment that I just looked at him and said, you are missing, you are absolutely missing the boat here. You have a calling. And, you know, he thought about it and he was passionate about photography and he loved architecture and design and he gave up.
Now, is this Anton?
No, this is Annette. This okay. is a photographer who was my photographer three photographers ago.
Wow. And
he actually became very well known very quickly. He shot for me and a handful of other agents for about a year before his business really took off. And now he's a highly sought after architectural photographer and designers and architects. He shoots magazine covers and for all the designers here, he flies all over the world. I can't get him anymore, but he has a huge.
Well, he owes you big time.
And he has. He jumped in.
That's awesome.
He has. Yeah, he has. And so that was probably 15 years ago now. And then I had another photographer after this gentleman who was also, he was a ton of fun and taught photography at the University of Washington. I had been a model for him back, you know, in the 80s. We'd known each other since the 80s. And when he used to shoot for Getty Images and the precursor to that, I can't recall the name, but he did evocative faces and things of that sort. And so I was a model for evocative faces. And
wow.
we shot together for probably 10 years. And then about 3 years ago, he phased out and then I just started working with a new photographer and we work together very, very closely. And he does all of his own editing. He does everything for me top to bottom. And so I think a lot of it is just, he's very passionate as well. And he's brilliant. So he's been my photographer now for at least the past couple of years.
I mean, it's passion is the key. It's well-harnessed passion so that you don't drive yourself crazy. It's a lesson. Maybe that will be the name of the interview because we don't know yet, obviously. Question for you. So you came from passionate, hard-driven, I'm going to do this and I'm going to make it. 10 years, you finally get an assistant. You finally figure out how to train her, get her running. Fast forward to today. I mean, you're selling $10 million properties, like most people sell $200,000 properties, and you have a team and you're happy and you're balanced. And yes, you are a top agent, well-recognized in the city of Seattle, by the way, as well as the country, if not globally, especially in your market. And you've got two assistants. So tell us a little bit, you've got a team. I mean, you're not a team though. It's you with two assistants. Is that
correct? Yes.
So tell us a little bit about how you're structured now and how that works. And that may give us a little bit more, how can we be real estate agents and have a peaceful, happy life like you? Right?
Again, it's the scale of my business at this point in my career is intentional. And it's, because I specialized early on with condominiums and downtown Seattle, I'm very well known in that arena. And those clients, both buyers and sellers, all had homes in neighborhoods or maybe jumping off from a condominium that they purchased into buying a home in a neighborhood or buying a second home or buying an island property. Over the years, in addition to my specialization in downtown condominiums and especially penthouses and the higher end condominiums, I've had successes with, you know, having sold the most expensive condominium in downtown Seattle to date twice.
Wow.
The most expensive condominium penthouse in downtown Seattle when I sold it to my client back in 2006. He had just sold his tech company to a large tech company and wanted to do something fun with the money and or with a small portion of it. And so he bought this condominium and then he hired his childhood friend who was an interior designer to design it for him with him, redo it, got it, redid it, lived in it, owned it until it closed. We sold it for $12 million. And along with the specialization in downtown Seattle with the higher end condominiums and penthouses, I've been able to find my way to extraordinary homes, architecturally significant homes in various neighborhoods all throughout the region. And not just in city, but on Vashon Island or a ranch in Anacortes or the island in Reef Island in the San Juans. So I think the passion just follows this path to interesting and historic, if not just architecturally significant properties.
Wow. I mean, truly, you've found your passion to create the path.
I think I'm known more for the level of business and the way I do business. And again, my business is intentionally scaled at this point.
So question, intentionally scale, everybody, by the way, there's a tip, because at some point it's like over renovating a house with our businesses. So you just start costing. But back to my question, if somebody had told you at the beginning of your career what it was going to look like today, what would you have said?
I would have hoped to have longevity in the business, be able to be I think it's hard.
Would you have said no way, or would you have said, but of course?
Well, I think I would have been hopeful. And
depends on what day and what phase of your career, maybe.
Exactly. But no, I don't think when you're starting out, you have any sense of it other than I go back to the beginning when I was so fortunate to share in all those conversations with agents who were 20 and 30 years my senior, who were getting ready to retire. And I feel like I was so fortunate to hear those conversations and hear those stories and really learn the business from that point of view. And I feel that that's something that Very few agents today who have started, maybe started in the last 5 or 10 years. I think that they're really thrown into this business, and you know, without a life raft, really.
Yeah.
It's a very different place.
It's very true. The business was not glamorous when I started it. It was like, okay, because I need to make some money. But what was your biggest, in working with these agents, I'm going to ask you both, your biggest aha about this business coming into it, and what was your biggest lesson or biggest like real nugget that you got from this exposure to these experienced, grounded agents giving you, you know, learning the reality of the business as opposed to watching $1 million real estate agent?
I think it was the contracts, and it was really getting in the weeds with the deals and in how offices functioned at that time. Monday morning meetings were not just sharing listings. Monday morning meetings were a conference room with coffee and pastries and everyone sharing their war stories of the previous weekend and what happened. And we would dissect these deals that were scary. They were so scary. And I think the thing that I learned was that the contracts are real and our license is on the line every single day. And you cannot take that for granted. We are in large part controlling the destiny of these transactions for our clients, and you know what the outcome is going to be, whether it's going to be a good outcome or a bad outcome. And I think I learned from these agents how important it is to understand your responsibility and that these are legally binding contracts.
Wow. That's what makes the job so important. And it's what drives the passion of the impact that we have.
I think the contracts and what's on the line every day and how you can so easily get into trouble if you don't know what you're doing.
What's your advice on, and then we've got a final three after this, in coming into this business when you find yourself not knowing what you're doing? And I think brokers now have to work on such a large scale to be profitable. Uh-huh. What's the solution to that? How do agents get around that and figure out how to get through deals when they're new and they can legally do them?
I think it's really important when you're selecting a company and an office, a brokerage, that you have a really strong connection with your broker. And I think you have your broker on speed dial. And if there's a question that you can't answer, you are texting, calling, sending smoke signals to your broker, and you don't put your pen to the paper until you understand the full ramifications of what your client is asking you to do or what you think might be a good idea. I think you have to run it by your broker, and it's just so important to know what you're doing and understand. I do think that is, that's one of the biggest challenges of being a new agent, is when do you feel like you can give up the water wings and you just have to just keep going and call your broker and have a handful of smart agents also on speed dial if you can't reach your broker and you've got to do something quickly. But ask someone who is smarter than you, who's been in the business a long, long time, and create these alliances with these agents so that they know if they see you calling that you might be calling because it's really, really important.
Exactly. Final three questions. I never give away the final three, by the way. So, except they're always the same. But number one, what has been the most powerful tool or resource for your business and your success or your clients?
The most powerful tool?
Resource. It could be something you do, technology, information, the way you keep that vague intentionally, see what you come up with.
Probably the association with the brand, the Sotheby's Realty brand, I would say is the most powerful tool that we have, our network. The fact that you and I are sitting here today, I mean, this friendship has been built through the relationship that was created through the market leaders. And that's a really powerful tool. And being able to refer our clients to agents who work the way we do all over the world.
So true. So well said. Because I obviously agree with you, but there's so much to that. It's not easy to come by. Question number two, if there's any book that we've got to read before we leave this life or even this week, ideally, what should that book be that's most impacted your career and your life?
All right. Well, I would have to say that I don't have a lot of time for reading, and I never have. And it's not to say that I'm not a reader. I read a lot. I read voraciously, but I tend to read newspapers and magazines and articles. And
I'm sending you audibles. I don't read either, but every book I say I read, I listen to in five increment like sections on audibles. What do you find is your biggest resource, your outlet resource for new information, new ideas, new ways of doing, but or learning things even?
On my phone.
Life, right?
Life and my phone. I mean, we are bombarded with information and it's coming to you all day long, news messages, updates, my phone, my iPad, never without either of them. And I will say this, my goal, I have a stack of books that I would like to read.
Oh, what's in the stack?
I don't have them sitting right here next to me, but I do have an interesting stack and I have a wonderful window seat and I'm just waiting for the day that I can actually curl up.
I'm dying to know what's in the stack. Any other novels or business books or...
And I will call you. I will call you. There is one book that I just picked up, and I love cookbooks. That's one of my weaknesses. I'm not a huge cook.
Your biggest vice is a cookbook. I love it. I
absolutely love cookbooks, and I used to collect cookbooks. I just bought the new Ina Garten what is it? Modern Comfort Food, I think. And I've been poring over that. But I did buy a book recently that I was inspired by, and I have not read it yet, but it's called The Blue Mind. And I was inspired by a collaboration between the author and... I have to say, I think it's a condominium project in Miami. And there's a collaboration. It's called The Blue Mind.
I'm going to Google it right now.
It talks about the importance of being around water, and that can be being in water, swimming, being in a pool, being submerged in water. And there's a whole concept associated with a beautiful condominium project in somewhere in Florida, and they are connected with this author of The Blue Mind.
I'm going to read this for everybody. The Blue Mind, Wallace J. Nichols.
Yes, that's it.
Why are we drawn to the ocean each summer? This is an Amazon. But anyway, why are we drawn to the ocean each summer? Why does being near water set our minds and bodies at ease? In Blue Mind, Wallace J. Nichols revolutionizes how we think about these questions, revealing the remarkable truth about the benefits of being in or under or simply near water. Combining cutting-edge neuroscience with compelling personal stories from top athletes, leading scientists, military veterans, and gifted artists, he shows how proximity to water can improve performance, increase calm, diminish anxiety, and increase professional success. That's why Jonathan Spears at like 25 was selling over $100 million a year. Just saying, he's on 30A in the Gulf of Mexico. That must be it. I don't know about everybody else. Wow. Okay.
Thank you for that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. So ordering that on my Audible's account next. Last question. Oh, I have to, and two more questions because I'm dying to know, you don't cook, but you love cookbooks. Explain that for a minute.
I cook, but I don't. Again, if I had time to cook, I would also have time to sit in my window seat and read. I love to think about cooking. I love to think that at some point I'm going to make this or that dish. And I think by surrounding myself with cookbooks that eventually that might become a reality. So I love cookbooks. I love the, I'm such a visual. I love the photography and
too I fun.
Beautiful food.
It's good to have, it's good to dream. You've accomplished the impossible. Now just like cook. Not to undermine cooking, everyone. I love that though. I don't love to cook. I mean, I don't cook, but I love cookbooks. But that explains it. Last question. If there is anything that you would hope we remember, if we're going to forget everything else, what is the one thing that we just have to remember, or you would hope we remember from this conversation today?
Goodness. Just that desire and passion are really, two very, very important tools in this business. And I don't think you can be successful and fulfilled without having that passion. And I think if it's the right industry for you and you're the paths have led you down this road. I think look at yourself, look at your life, look at your life history, and dissect that and drill down and really seek your passion in this industry so that you can have that longevity. Because I do think that if you have the passion, you can have the longevity.
Wow. Thank you. How passion, well, how to allow your passion to create your path to your best destiny?
Yes. Yes.
That's very well said. That might be the title. I never title it on the interview, but it was everything just keeps coming together, just like your life. Moira, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was a great interview.
Terry, thank you. This was so much fun. This was really fun to share. Thank you.
Thank you. It was an